This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Rick Moore is not here. Sean McCord stepping in on a beautiful Sunday morning. Hot, but at least cooler than it has been. You're listening to the Wake Up Call on WNRN 91.9 in Charlottesville and Crozana Valley's 101.1. Today's programming on WNRN is brought to you by Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you are encouraged to be kind, have fun, and do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville and at three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. And we are sitting here in the studio with two fine-looking young people. I'm going to put your microphones up, and let's get you to say hello. Joel, can you say hi first?
Hey, Sean.
Hey, don't be afraid to get in as close as you like to that microphone. You can't be too close.
All right.
And Erica Helen, can we get a voice check for you?
Hi, how's it going?
Let's try that one more time.
Hi.
Okay, there we go. Now, Joel and Erica, you run a farm.
We do. Out in
Free Union, and the name of your farm is the Free Union Grass Farm. Mm-hmm. And people can find out more information about your farm at freeuniongrassfarm.com. Joel, you're a local boy. You're from Free Union. You grew up out here. Mm-hmm. And you went off to college, had many adventures, came back and said, you know what I really want to do is I want to start a farm.
That's right, yeah.
And Erica, you're relatively new to the area.
That's true. I'm from Oklahoma.
From Oklahoma. Let's do a little bit of biography, just so people know who you are and how you got here. And Erica, let's start with you.
Well, I was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I was found by Warren Wilson College in Asheville, North Carolina. They just got me in the mail one year and decided to go there, and I ended up studying sustainable agriculture and environmental studies. And started reading about Joel Salatin and Polyface Farm. And after a series of other, you know, farm-based internships, I decided I wanted to try and work at Polyface. And so I did that 2 summers ago, and that's how I initially came to Virginia and, you know, got to know the Shenandoah Valley and started coming to Charlottesville to, you know, drop off chickens at Feast and lots of other places. So that's how I made it here.
And where were you working when you met Joel Salatin?
I was working at Polyface and, yeah, delivered chickens to Feast, where Joel was recently a cheesemonger, slinging cheese to the masses from behind the counter. And, I remember seeing him from from the lobby, and I think he remembers seeing me from behind the cheese counter. But we really had no interaction until I came back to Virginia. After my internship at Polyface, I worked at another awesome local farm, Caramont Farm, mm-hmm. Run by Gail Hobbs-Page, and I ended up delivering cheese to Feast for her and formally met him then. So that's how we kind of came to be.
All right. Now, you're two good friends, your business partners, you're sitting next to each other. Erica, you're going to have a natural tendency to turn your face and look at Joel every now and then, but when you do, we can't hear you as well.
I'll do my best.
Okay. All right. And Joel, you grew up in the area. You went. In fact, your farm now is on your parents' land, where you grew up.
That's correct. Yeah.
We'll get back to that in a second. But you went off to college. Mm-hmm. And remind us what you studied.
I went to Guilford College in North Carolina. I studied politics.
Mm-hmm.
And then after school, I went to Florida. Worked on some boats, tried out the big city, and realized pretty quickly that that's not the place to be. Didn't really find anything interesting in politics, and came back and just figured out as well that there wasn't a lot of opportunity I found in the area, but it seemed like farming was a very exciting field, so to speak, to really try it out, and it's worked out so far, absolutely.
Well, it's more than a job, and it's not like you interviewed for it, you know, you fill out a resume, you put on a suit and tie every morning. I mean, it's more of a calling, I would think, like going into the priesthood or...
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there's probably some similarities in that as well. It's definitely a way of life. It's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day in a way, you know. There's always, you know, things to do, you know, around the clock. And it is, it's exciting, but it's a beautiful way of life for sure.
You're listening to The Wake Up Call on WNRN, which can also be heard on SevillePodcast.com. We're talking to Joel Slezak and Erica Helen of Free Union Grass Farm. Support today is coming from L. Oppelman Central Virginia's Complete Music Headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages from Fender and Peavey. Also available, it's complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. All right, so you've come back to Virginia. The two of you meet. Now, Joel, had you already, before you met Erica, had you already thought about starting a farm, or was it finding a partner that really inspired that idea?
Well, I definitely started farming before Erica came around, raised some dairy cows growing up, and mm-hmm. Definitely raised a lot of chickens a couple years ago, just trying it out, seeing what it was like, learning what not to do and such. But when Erica came along, she definitely raised the bar, and I think with the two of us working together, we realized what we could accomplish and how we could run an effective business and farm and do it successfully, for sure.
You touched on something important there. So you went from farming, maybe hobby farming, uh-huh. to actually deciding it was a business. Now, you and I go back away. I know your mom. I've been out to your folks' place. And I remember back in high school, when you were a high schooler, you had a project where you raised a hog for a year. Mm-hmm. And as I recall, it had a rather profound effect on you. And on the people in your class. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I went to Tandem Friends School, and we have a senior project. Before you graduate, you must accomplish some sort of project. It can be very broad, anything really. And I chose to raise a pig from about 40 pounds to 300 pounds, and at the end of the pig's life, we killed it ourselves and dressed it and cut it up and learned the whole process. And it was a pretty powerful experience going through, you know, all the motions. And we learned a lot. And definitely it helped me understand as a farmer, you know, that farming is a different career, I suppose.
Not just a career. It's a way of life. I
mean, sure.
You're called upon to do things that we just don't do anymore.
Right.
You know, we come from, all of us come from, our ancestors had to work the land. Mm-hmm. They had to raise their own crops. They had to slaughter their own farm animals. But we don't do that anymore. I mean, when I want a side of beef, I go over to the store and I buy something frozen, and I stick it in the freezer. And when I'm ready to cook it up, I cook it up, and that's... Can't hear me at all?
There we go.
Okay. Beg your pardon. Let me start over again. Apparently we're having a few technical difficulties, i.e. I didn't push the right button. So we all come from farming. Our ancestors come from farming. Obviously, there used to be a lot more farms in the area. So talk a little bit about the transition. Are you hearing anything?
Yeah, I've got you. Yeah, I think one thing I could say about that is that I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, wow, you're a young person farming. Did you grow up farming? You know, it seems like how would you have come into it if you didn't do it when you were young? And I think it's actually precisely because I didn't do it when I was young that it still has a novelty about it. It seems really new and really fresh. I've met a lot of people who are older who did farm when they were younger just because it was a way of life, and they definitely did it by necessity. But you meet so many people who are like, I have fond memories of that to a point, but I also never want to do it again.
Right.
So, I mean, there are some really great things that we recall about styles of agriculture in the past, but it's really hard work. And if you're a kid and you're growing up and you have to do that hard work and you just kind of want to run around and play outside, it can have kind of a negative feel to it. So I guess I was really lucky in a way that I got to come into it on my own and figure out how it's really great and then share that with somebody else. So
my parents grew up in the Depression. And right. we lived in a relatively urban area, mm-hmm. but my mother has memories of having to raise goats and having to raise chickens,
right.
and you know, for the eggs and also to slaughter them. And she said the same thing: I'm never going to do that again. So, you know, I was raised buying food and meat at the grocery store.
Right.
How were you raised, Erica? I want to focus on you for a second. And how do you make that transition from the kind of modern conveniences that we're used to? To having to raise animals and know that they're going to be slaughtered.
Well, I think, let's see. I mean, I was definitely raised, you know, getting food at the supermarket and taking it home and, you know, cooking it with minimal preparation, hopefully. My parents don't really like to cook that much, which is fine. You know, they do great. my mom is actually in town right now, so love you, Mom.
She's sitting right out
she's
there.
She's actually right here. But yeah. Anyway, I think... just through learning about how food production really is one of the most important things in the environmental movement, I just realized the importance of getting back as close as you can to how that food was grown. And I realized that the payback is huge. I mean, you just have so much more of an experience when you eat, if you know everything about the history of that food.
Mm.
And so I started out planting seeds at the garden at Warren Wilson, and I'd never really been exposed to gardening or farming, and it's a work college, and so everyone works on a crew there, and frankly I had no interest in the garden or farm. I was like, why would I ever want to do that? And it came about really slowly, and it was through eating and through experiencing, you know, how much more meaningful food is, and we do it 3 times a day, you know, we eat all the time. And so it's one of the most important things you can do is understand everything about your food.
Do you find, Joel, I'm going to turn to you now. Do you find that living that close to the land, it's made you more aware of what you eat every day?
Absolutely, yeah. We try to eat as much as we can from our farm or mm-hmm. from our friends' farms that we know and trust. And for some reason, I don't know if it's, you know, in your head or if it's, you know, reality, but the food almost always tastes better when it's coming from your farm or, you know, someone you know, or from the farmer's market. It's fresher and it's raised with much higher standards than anything you can find in the grocery store.
But seriously, aren't you tempted to go over to the 7-Eleven every now and then and, you know, pick up a Twinkie?
He is, I'll tell you. Not a Twinkie, but...
Yeah, you know, we're not perfect, but there's a time and a place, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing that you just pointed out, which is that a lot of modern industrialized food does still taste really good.
Mm.
And it's not that bad on a number of levels. I mean, Joel Salatin, when I worked at Polyface, he would always say, the proof is in the eating. And I totally disagree with that. I think modern science has allowed our food to be engineered in a way that can make it taste really good when it's, you know, it's filler, it's garbage, it's not really that exciting. So actually knowing and understanding your food and appreciating everything about it and noticing its complexities and getting more nutrition out of it because you raised it in real soil, I think all those things are just paramount. So
you're listening to The Wake Up Call on WNRN 91.9 in Charlottesville, which can also be heard on SeavillePodcast.com. We're talking with Joel Slezak and Erica Helen of Free Union Grass Farm. And you can find out more about their farm at freeuniongrassfarm.com. Today's programming on WNRN is brought to you by Blue Ridge Graphics, Mead Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 434-296-9746. That number in the Charlottesville Yellow Pages and at brgtshirts.com. All right, we were talking about industrial food production. Now, I reached out to you a few weeks ago about coming on the air today, mm-hmm. and I think this topic has become suddenly very trenchant with reports that we're getting out of Europe with another E. coli scare. And what's really scary is that after several weeks of not knowing where it was coming from and this new mutant strain, the last word I heard, and we were talking about this just before we went on the air, is that it may have been, they're, right now they're trying to identify bean sprouts that were grown in Germany. So what are people supposed to do with this information? Talk a little bit about your farming process and what a typical day is like on the farm. And Joel, you said that you just know that the food tastes better because you know where it came from. But talk about how it's healthier too, and how local farming and local food is just subject to less, there are fewer steps along the way. It goes fewer steps to get to your dinner plate, and what it means for the health of people who eat that food.
Well, first of all, I think that what you said about fewer steps is really huge. You know, we know, yeah. You know, we were at the farmer's market yesterday in Charlottesville selling mm-hmm. chicken and duck, and we met every single person, shook their hand, and sold them our product, and we stand behind that product, and that person knows that the only place that food has been, you know, at our farm, and then, you know, basically into their hands. So there's a very small chain. You know, I know the E. coli outbreak in Europe, they can't even really figure out exactly where it came from, like you said, and that's really troubling and very sad. So I think it's exciting that the local food movement can provide, a lot of accountability to the food we eat. So
I would totally agree with that. I mean, when you meet us and we sell you our food, it's what we eat for dinner. So why would we sell anybody food that we wouldn't eat ourselves? I mean, our hands have touched it. We are accountable for it. And anyone is welcome to come to our farm and look at what we do. I mean, there's a lot of modern, very large-scale farms today that nobody can enter. You literally cannot go into them because they don't want you to see what's going on, and they don't want to get sued. And you know, we don't have that problem. We want you to come to our farm and check it out. And it's dirty, and sometimes it smells, and there's animals running around. But that's how you raise food. I mean, you can do it in an organized fashion, but it's real. You know, we're not hiding anything.
Yeah, there's a couple of states that there's legislation right now going through their state houses to make it illegal for anybody to go
photograph farms,
photograph or videotape industrial farms, because God forbid we should actually see how food is made. So so you raise ducks.
We do.
And chickens. And what else?
100% grass-fed beef, and we also have laying hens for eggs. So beef, chicken, duck, eggs.
Right. Now, and from what I understand, you've broken out of the confines, Joel, of your parents' farm, and some of your neighbors are allowing your cattle to graze their farms as well?
Yes. I grew up on 13 acres, and probably only 8 acres of actual pasture, and which is not nearly enough to make a living farming for the style we're doing, I suppose, as meat farmers. So a neighbor gave us 20 acres to use, and then another set of land at a different farm down the road, about 10 minutes down the road. So we are in a few different places around the area, and it's definitely hectic. I think farming in one location in the future is the way to go, but it's working for us. And yeah.
Well, you grew up in Free Union. Have you seen? Were there more active farms when you were growing up?
I think to a certain extent, yes. There definitely were a lot more cows, and definitely less houses. We've seen, you know, amazing development in the area, which definitely does, you know, take away from farmland, but I think there's still a lot of room, and there are a lot of small farms, cropping up around the area, and I think there's plenty of room for farming growth as well as, you know, human growth. So.
Okay, well, we're on the radio, so not everybody can see you, but I can tell our listeners that that clearly farming is doing you well. You're young, you're healthy, you're fresh, you have lots of energy. Bottle energy for a minute and sit back, because we need to get the weather. The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly sunny, 50% chance of shower and thunderstorms today with a high of 90 to 95. mid-80s in the valley. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with 40% showers, clearing after midnight. Tonight, with a low of 60-65 upper 50s valley. Then, mildly sunny tomorrow with a high of 80-85 upper 70s valley. Right now, it's partly cloudy and sunny in 84 in Lynchburg, partly cloudy in 81 in Richmond, partly cloudy and 79 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
All right, Rick is away for the day. I hope he's listening in. You're listening to the Wake-Up Call on WNRN, which can also be heard on SeaviewPodcast.com. We're talking to Joel Slezak and Erica Helen of Free Union Grass Farm in Free Union. And one more time, people can find out more about your farm at freeuniongrassfarm.com. Actually, let's talk a little bit about the website. You can go onto the website, you can find a little bit about the farm, but what else can people do?
They can look at photos of us if they want to. There's only a few up there. We need to update it. But, yeah, you should check out the website. I made it. I'm pretty proud of it, so I'd like to show it off.
It's very nice.
There's a really nice video of Erica killing chickens, actually.
I missed that.
At the farm.
Compliments of our good friend Katie Marshall.
Yeah, did a project for, I believe, grad school, and came out and did a little 10-minute video on the farm last year. And it's gotten a lot of response on what it's like for, I guess, everyone else to watch us, you know, in the process of growing food and getting it to the table. So check it out.
So if people want some of your pasteurized chicken and duck or your 100% grass-fed beef.
Not pasteurized, pasture-raised.
Pasture-raised, excuse me.
That works.
I was reading it right off the website. It says pastured chicken and duck, which is fine until you try to say it out loud.
Sure.
100% grass-fed beef or free-range eggs. Where do they go other than the farmer's market on Saturdays?
We sell to a number of restaurants. It's always fun to sell to the finer restaurants in town because the chefs really appreciate your product. They know it's raised well. They can look at the fat and the skin and and the color of the product and know that it's of the highest quality. We sell to Rebecca Feast, Moss, Duners, a few other places. The Food Hub buys quite a bit, so. It's been fun. There's some new buying clubs cropping up that are selling to D.C. and a little bit of the greater Virginia area, and it's been fun to see that food movement grow for sure.
And I want to talk more about the food movement, but I'd like to get a sense too of what a typical day is like at the farm. Now, in our visions, farmers up at the crack of dawn to slop the hogs and. And milk the cows. It's a little different what you're doing.
Right. I think, first of all, we've never really had a typical day.
Yes.
There's no such thing.
I think because we're starting out and we both don't really have a lot of experience, there's always things happening that aren't supposed to be happening for the good or the bad. And it's always exciting for sure. But I guess these summer mornings we try to get up early. It gets light at about 5:15.
So. Mm-hmm.
And we spend the first part of the morning on one farm moving pasture pens full of chickens and ducks and watering and feeding, giving them fresh grass every day.
So a pasture pen is a self-enclosed pen?
It's an enclosed pen with a roof. It's 10 feet by 12 feet and 2 feet high. And we move them one space forward across the field every day, sometimes twice a day. And the chickens get a fresh, batch of salad and greens and bugs, and then I spend the day there, eating grain and growing.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them a clean environment, it's good for the pasture as well. It fertilizes it and cleans it up and grooms it, and a lot of times the animals go for the weeds, before some of the grass, so it's a really great system. We're really happy with it.
So, in addition to the livestock, how much? What else do you need to? You have to keep the grass growing,
yeah.
And the animals help with that process.
Yeah.
Are there other vegetables or other wheats, things that you grow on the farm?
No vegetables, really. Even having, four different kinds of animals is a headache enough and enough responsibility. So there's definitely not much more we could handle at this point. So we stick to the cows and the ducks and the chickens.
We rely on friends to help us eat a lot of vegetables.
Right.
We eat a lot of meat, so we need to balance it out.
So are you both out there at dawn?
Yeah.
Moving the chickens
Absolutely,
around?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of chores go on until dark, too,
Sure.
There's definitely no set schedule, so... And, sometimes all night as well. We had a bear attack the chicken house a couple weeks ago, and it was a long night for sure.
Well, I was going to ask you about predators. we've got neighbors who have a chicken coop here in town, uh-huh. and they're fighting off raccoons and foxes, and that's in the middle of the town. I imagine out there in the country you're getting more foxes and bears and occasional dragon.
what have you, yeah.
Yeah, so how do you keep the predators away?
We've used lights, a lot of electric fencing. Mm. Works pretty well. Keep the gun loaded. It's just, you just kind of, figure it out, get to know the surrounding. It's always different. We've had, skunks, raccoons, foxes, coyotes,
awesome.
Bears. We've had it all, so... It's just, one night at a time, figure it out. There are some tricks, but we're still figuring it out.
So good Lord, when do you sleep?
not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, not enough, for sure.
So this is a young person's calling.
That's right.
Well, we know a lot of people who are a little bit older than us who are doing okay, but it's great to have interns around and other hands on the farm to help out. But right now it's just us, so at some point we'd love to have some help. We actually got an offer yesterday. But I want to say something really quick about free range. We hear a lot of people, they look for free range products, and I think they have an idea in their head that, things should just be able to run around and roam free all the time. But yeah, we were just talking about predators. If you don't keep your animals in some kind of enclosed area where they are safe, you have predator problems.
Right.
So the 10 by 12 pasture pens we move every day are vital, because if those chickens were just out running around, we wouldn't be raising chickens. So it's important to have free range, and it's important for them to have enough space for their personal needs. But if you just let your animals run around all the time, they're gonna get taken. So this
may be a little beyond your pay grade, but I'm sure people who are listening are going to be curious about this, because we go into the store and we see organic eggs, mm-hmm. and we see free-range eggs. Now, are those, do you know if there are, this is defined, if there's some body, state or federal, that, that define, that says, okay, this is what a free-range chicken is, and does it mean that they're running around the farm, or does it mean that they're in a pasteurized pen? And what are the differences between free-range and organic? What should they look for when they go into the store?
Well, I think, what I just said about free range, it actually is a defined term. And on a large-scale production standard, it actually only requires that the chickens have access to go outside through a small door, which they do, but they're still in a really large confinement house, and all of their feed is inside. There's nothing outside that they want. And their whole pecking order, their whole life is inside. So they're not actually really ranging.
They have a door, and they have the opportunity to escape.
They have the opportunity, but they're just not inclined, And so I guess with organic, you're working with the same thing. You have large-scale, not always, but a lot of times, large-scale confinement houses where they're being fed organic feed, but just the feed doesn't necessarily make the bird. You need to be giving them access to vegetables, to sunlight, to fresh air. Even in our barn where we start our baby chickens and ducks sometimes, it's pretty stuffy in there because it needs to be warm and safe.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you get a lot of birds in one area, it's not pleasant for your nose. So they've got to have fresh air. And I think even with organic, it's important to have organic grain happening in this country. There needs to be more sources for it. But that's not necessarily the answer. I think it's so easy in this day and age to just go to the farmer's market once a week and find somebody who's raising local eggs. It's so easy. You don't even have to go to their farm if you don't want to. But if you meet them one time and then you go there once a week to buy your eggs, I mean, I think you've done a much better thing. You can see the person who is accountable for your food instead of getting it from some mysterious place. So.
Well, we're talking about standards, mm-hmm. state standards, federal, regional. Your farm is a business. You know, it's not just something you do for fun. You sell your food to local restaurants. You bring it to Seville Market. Mm-hmm. What standards do you have to meet, and who's following up on that? Where have you learned about those standards, and what do you do to meet them?
Well, I think, you know, we've set the standards that we want to achieve, mm-hmm. and we follow through with it. And I think that having an open door policy helps,
right.
Having people come out and see what we're doing. And frankly, we've realized that this style of farming is more fun. It's more profitable, and it looks better too, aesthetically. You know, so that's kind of where our standards go, and by moving the cows every day, moving the chickens every day, it just is a much better all-around system, and it keeps our standards high for sure. And if we don't do those things, then the quality of the product in the end goes down as well. And we both love food and love to eat, and we want to keep that product, you know, top notch. So
we also have in Virginia the regulations for small-scale chicken producers are pretty lenient, really. Mm-hmm. There's a 20,000 bird exemption. So if you raise on your farm 20,000 birds or less, you can process them yourselves on farm with no inspection. So basically, there isn't any governmental body that's holding us accountable. We're holding ourselves accountable, and so are our customers. So we process all of those birds ourselves. And if anybody wants to come out and look for themselves and, you know, measure our cleanliness and our organization, they're welcome to do that. So I think in that sense, we're really lucky that we don't have any other regulations. But in the way of beef, we do take our beef to a USDA-inspected slaughterhouse, and to sell beef in the state, you have to generally have USDA inspection,
right.
But poultry is a little easier for us.
So. And I'm going to guess you have less than 20,000 chickens.
We do. and I'm really glad about that, because we're doing as many as we can right now, and I think our personal level of sustainability is only a few thousand birds right now. So
mm-hmm.
hopefully with the help of some interns in the future, we'll be able to do a few more, but we really have no desire to get that big. I mean, honestly, the bigger you get, the further away you become from your
sure.
product, and the less sure you can be that it's really good. And so, I mean, for our purposes, we're always eating our product. We eat chicken, we eat beef, we eat duck all the time, you know, hopefully one from each batch, just so we can kind of measure our quality. And you have to do that, you know, it's quality control on your end. So, yeah, that's how we keep our standards high.
All right, so you mentioned interns. So if somebody wants to learn how to farm,
yeah,
how do they do that? How do they contact you?
Well, you can check out our website. There's lots of information there, and our email contact is there as well.
That's reunioncrossfarm.com.
That is right. And, I think the most important thing to look for in an intern is somebody who really knows how to work. And we're noticing a lot more these days that people are intrigued by it, by what we do, but when it comes down to, like, getting your friends out to help you, they're not so sure they really want to do that. So we were really lucky just at market yesterday. We had some, you know, young person come up to us and say, hey, I'd kind of like to volunteer my time for you 2 or 3 days a week. And we were just blown away, you know. But then you think back, and I did a lot of internships where I was paid very little money, but that's just education right there. It's a really good education that you can't really put a dollar figure on. And I guess at this point, early stage of our production, what we can really offer in the way of compensation is just product. And I think that's better than money right now. So that's where we are.
Well, you talked about, I mean, all the things that you're talking about make sense. I'm learning about the pasteurized pens, the pasture pens, excuse me. Got to stop saying that.
we could coin that term.
Yeah.
Pasture pens heated to a high temperature, yes.
Yes. Oh, past few days, I'm sure there hasn't been a problem.
Indeed.
And, you know, allowing the cows to graze on the fresh grass. But we've touched a little bit on this with both of your experience, but I just want to sort of readdress it again for people who are listening and say, well, that all makes sense, but how did you learn how to do that? You know, did you go to Barnes & Noble and pick up Farming for Dummies? and I imagine, you know, some of this has been an evolutionary process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where did you first learn the old techniques, and what have you been learning since you started the farm? And Joel, if you could get a little closer to your microphone.
Great. I just read a lot of books.
So I wasn't wrong.
No, you're right. Absolutely. There's a lot of, I call them self-help farming books. You know, they tell you, the ins and outs. They do paint a pretty picture. It's not as always as pleasant as, you know, you read. That's been very helpful. And then just trial and error. You just got to do it and see what happens. And, a lot of things go wrong. You know, we've lost a lot of birds and we've, you know, had a lot of things go wrong. The weather is always, you know, the wild card, I think. I think on paper farming is very profitable and doable, but when you factor in the weather and the predators, then that all goes out the window, and you just never know.
So. Indeed.
Well, yeah, I actually want to ask that. You have plenty of food to eat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But are you making a living?
Almost. We're close.
Well, we've only been in production since last April.
Right.
So I think any new business venture, you start up and all you do is just hemorrhage money. You just let it go. You're like, okay, I have to buy this, because in order to make money, you kind of have to spend money, at least for the first few years. So, but I think, you know, last year we came really close to breaking even in our first year, and that's
really
pretty exciting.
I mean, hey, you're doing a lot better than a lot of first year businesses.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, the quality of life that we enjoy, I mean, we're not rich by any standards if you look at our bank accounts, but we eat really well all the time. I mean, given that we have time to cook, but
yes.
but when we do, we eat really well. And there's a lot of people who make more money than we do, I suppose, but don't get to eat duck confit for dinner whenever they want to. You know, that's kind of a luxury, you know. So we're doing really well, and I think just as we get more organized and as we learn and as we figure out every day how to tackle new challenges, all we do is grow, and we will make more money because we've taken on so many new clients this year, and there's a lot of room for growth.
Well, I wanted to ask you just about that, about taking on clients. You've mentioned some of the restaurants and markets that you're selling your food to. So are you approaching them? Are they approaching you? Is there a network in the area?
It's a little of both. We, you know, definitely have had more people contacting us, but with restaurants, it does take some persistence, and you have to follow up with you know, the people in charge and make sure that they take your product, because it's definitely it takes a lot of marketing for sure. So I think that's another, you know, hard part about farming, is that you spend all day working out in the field, and then. And then you got to come inside and find time to actually sell the product. So it gets interesting for sure.
Well, speaking of local restaurants, support today is coming from The Backyard, the UVA Corner's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue across from Paracoffee. The Backyard has a spring menu, daily specials, and an ever-changing list of beers on tap. For more info, it's 434-202-8215, TheBackyardUVA.com, or on Facebook.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Today's Wake-Up Call on WNRN is brought to you by The Hook, Charlottesville's free daily paper of news and reviews. In this week's Hook, 8 years ago, teenagers murdered their Crozet neighbor and then burned the house in an effort to hide the crime. Now one of the confessed killers maintains that another innocent man is behind bars while a woman who shared in the crime walks free. Was the investigation botched by police coercion and a false confession? A 1912 brick house in JPA is slated for demolition to the dismay of preservationists. Could tax credits save the historical home? And could a school founder's opposition to vaccines have put students in danger following a local measles breakout? All this and more in The Hook, guaranteed to be E. coli free. All right, we are talking with Joel Slezak and Erica Helen of Free Union Grass Farm. You can find out more information about their farm at freeuniongrassfarm.com. wakeupcallin.com. You're listening to the Wake Up Call on WNRM, which can also be heard on SeavillePodcast.com. Let's talk a little bit more about the business as I bring your microphones up. And Erica, you balked at this earlier, so we won't spend too much time. But tell me a little bit about the goals that you're trying to meet, short term, and do you have longer term goals?
Well, I think the short-term goal, the most important thing to remember is that you have to take every day one day at a time, and or at least every week one day at a time, because you got to plan ahead a little bit. But yeah, there's always something that's going to happen that's out of the ordinary. Not everything happens the way you plan your time. So you have to plan a little bit of extra time to take care of those surprises. But I think our main goals are just to produce really good food that we know is safe, that we like to eat, and that we can share with our community while also growing really good grass. I mean, we're called Free Union Grass Farm because everything we do eats grass and relies on grass, and without it, you know, we would have nothing. And so we have seen just in our, you know, little over a year of production how the grass responds to proper management. Mm-hmm. We're really excited about the way it looks, and we think that we can just continue to restore the soil, and I think that's our biggest overall goal, is just to grow really good grass and improve the soil. And in so doing, there's a multitude of benefits. We get to eat what comes from that, which is the best one. But we also sequester a little bit of carbon. We help fight global warming in our own small way, which not a lot of people think about. We're not even planting trees. We're just growing grass. It's an amazing organism, and it's really powerful. And so I think as we move forward and just continue to grow and raise really good food, grass will just keep on growing.
So the farm itself, I was going to say self-sustaining. Obviously, it requires a lot of your physical work.
It's Joel and Erica sustained, yes.
Yes, yes. I refer to this as both a career and a calling, but do you see yourself continuing to do this in 5 years, in 10 years, or have you looked out that far?
I think so. Yeah. To be honest, you know, it's so hard in the beginning to kind of start a business and a farm at that. Every year, though, every month, it gets a little bit easier, and mm-hmm. you kind of learn the ropes a little better. You buy more equipment. You make more connections. Yeah, it definitely gets easier, and you continue to learn and understand the kind of the concept of farming and the environment you're in and what it means to actually improve the soil. And, you know, we've only read about it, and now we're actually starting to see in the second year uh-huh. real changes in the environment, in the pasture, in the grass, in the animals, and in ourselves. So it's very cool.
When you say easy, I assume that's on a relative scale.
Sure, of course. We don't want it to be too easy. We enjoy the hard work.
Right. It's laborious, not just physically laborious, but it takes a lot of thought. You have to be really tuned in mm-hmm. to the land and what's going on around you and changes, and some subtle and some large. Mm-hmm. All right. We've got a couple of calls in. And let me ask the first call that came in, because that's only fair. How do you protect the streams? Do you let the cows go in the streams?
We don't let the cows go in the streams. We on one farm we keep a 100 to 150 foot barrier from all the animals going anywhere near either a spring or a stream. Mm-hmm. On our own farm, we keep, you know, I'd say about 50 feet away. Mm-hmm. We take that pretty seriously. It's, you know, I think with the state of the oceans, you know,
right.
It's important to, you know, to do your part to keep the animals out of the streams for sure. So we do take that seriously, yeah.
We use portable electric fencing, which we, every time we move the cows, which is daily or every other day, depending on the paddock they're in, we have a reel with wire, and we just roll it up and then set up a new paddock and move them into it. So we have, you know, complete control over where they're going. And, you know, if we notice that there's a wet area, you know, after heavy rains, which we had earlier and, you know, a couple months ago, mm-hmm. We were able to really respond to that and say, okay, so this is obviously kind of a water thoroughfare. We should avoid grazing here. And we have that ability because we don't have, you know, permanent fencing except on a perimeter. So.
Okay, so the cows, too, are enclosed, but in a much larger area, in a paddock.
A paddock, mm-hmm.
Which is essentially a fence.
Just a space, yeah, that we kind of, we look at how tall the grass is, mm-hmm. You know, what's in the mix, what state of growth it's in. Ideally, we hit it at a vegetative state of growth versus a reproductive state just because it's a lot more palatable to the cows. But we have a very small amount of cows, and now suddenly we have a whole lot of grass, and we're really excited about that. But we're figuring out how to make our rotation match that state of growth. So, but yeah. No cows in the stream. It's important.
And this is a portable electric fence, so it comes with a little generator or batteries? Or?
Yeah, we run it off of a car battery, basically, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
just a single strand of electric wire with, plastic push-in posts.
And mm-hmm.
We can move, we move 10 cows in, about 30 minutes.
Yep.
Really?
I think it's probably the most exciting part for a day. We love it.
It's so fun.
Yeah, very fun.
Just like the actual opening of where they were into where they're going. Our cows are really well behaved. They're really well trained to electric fence. So
sure. I'm sure it doesn't take too many times before they figure it out.
No, and because we move them ourselves, on foot, they know us, they see us every day, they trust us. And so they know that whenever we make this one call, we go, whoop, every time they move. And we don't say really anything. As we're setting up the fence.
They come running.
So as soon as we make that sound, they look up from what they're doing, and they just walk to wherever we go. So
you bring, do you have a barn? I mean, do you bring them in at night?
Nope. No, they just stay out in the weather. Yeah.
So okay.
I think they got out one time a month ago and ran all the way to the road. And
it was weird.
We're free. We're free.
We got spooked, and, Erica made that call, and they turned around and walked right back. So.
Excellent. I got another anonymous note that someone had called in. We've addressed this, but I'll give you a chance to say it again. Is there a way to visit the farm? Is there a number you can call to do this?
I think our cell phones are on the website, and you can give us a call. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know
absolutely.
If I want to say that on the air.
No, you shouldn't. But you can say for
uniongrassfarm.com. Give it a look.
Yeah.
So people can go to the website and give you a call or drop you an email like I did and say, yeah, we'd like to come out and visit.
Yeah, we'd be happy to have you out. It's always something to look at, something to do.
Bear in mind, it is, we work all the time. And
right.
Because we, are kind of back and forth to where we have land, it's really helpful to have you call ahead of time so we can actually be where you meet us. So, and we work and we have our whole day planned out and we want to be able to take time off and show you everything we do. But if we know you're coming, it's a little more helpful. So.
And do you lose track of the days? Are Tuesdays just like Thursdays, just like Sundays for you?
Often, yes. Yeah. Because, the days are so similar. Yeah. We do lose track of what day of the week it is. Yeah.
Right. It's not a Monday through Friday job. It's not a 9-to-5 job. You don't clock in and clock out. Every day you're doing similar work, but I gather from what you said, Joel, it's not really a routine. There are things that you do every day,
sure,
but every day is also a little different.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So if someone, what would be, as young people yourself, what would be your advice for young people? What would be your advice for someone who wanted to start a farm of their own? Now, I know having the land to start with in the first place, mm-hmm. You're working off your folks' land, it was a big help.
Yes. That was a big help. But very quickly, we outgrew that small parcel and pretty easily found, some more land. The Food Hub is very helpful in setting up young farmers with land.
Tell me about the Food Hub. You mentioned that earlier. I'm not sure everyone knows what that
it's
is.
It's called the Local Food Hub. It is, and they are a nonprofit that buys food from local farmers and then resells it. So it's kind of a way. It's a middleman that allows the farmer to have a little more, flexibility in how they spend their time, whether they're farming or marketing. And they also are a resource for getting farmers more land, linking farmers with landowners.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there's a lot of landowners that have farmland sitting idol. So
right.
So it's a good resource. And
how did you get in touch with the Food Hub?
It's run by Kate Collier, who I worked with at Feast. So, but yeah, they're very easy to reach, and there's always someone answering the phone. But in terms of young people farming,
volunteer.
Yeah.
Volunteer. Yeah. But I think
to a real farm.
We both did this part time for a year, and it worked out great. And I think farming can be a great part time employment, whether it's gardening,
mm-hmm.
raising chickens.
Mm-hmm.
We keep hearing about people in Charlottesville raising birds. You know, more and more, there's lots of urban farming going on. So I think it's definitely easy to do. You can have a lot of fun, and you get a workout, get a tan. It's all free. Maybe even make a little money. So,
So you're looking for interns. You're looking for people who can come out on a regular basis and work on the farm. Mm-hmm. Would you welcome someone to just say, "I wanted to come out for a day and help out to see what it's like," or would that be enough? Would that be enough help to you?
No, I think that's always helpful. We're going to put you on a task you might not like, you know. And often the work we need is
right.
A little tedious, yeah. But yeah, and you know, we're always welcome to helpers.
Well, let's talk about the bigger picture. We've touched on this a bit, but the importance of farm to food and the local food movement. You know, there's been a lot of talk of that in the past few years about, as we talked about earlier, about knowing the steps that the fewer steps that it takes for the food to get to your plate.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just happening in Virginia. There are discussions about this happening at farming communities all across the country. So do you feel that? Do you feel you're part of a larger movement? And what does that mean to you?
I feel like we definitely are. I mean, we had a young woman, I think a couple months ago, actually came, and her name is Severin von Scharner Fleming. She's a really awesome young farmer out of the Hudson Valley in New York, and she made a documentary called The Greenhorns about young farmers all over the country, and she just kind of took a film crew and traveled around all those places, and she did a screening of that film at Morven, just... Yeah, I can't remember when it was, but we attended that, and it was really eye-opening for me. You know, we do this, and we're kind of out in our own little world at Free Union, and we forget that there really are a lot of people, you know, going through the same challenges we're going through all the time, and she really kind of opened my eyes to that. So it is, it's kind of edifying. You realize that you're not really alone, and there's a lot of people who are behind you, even if they're not right there next to you, so...
And I think, yeah, people always need to eat. And so I think it's a movement that's growing, out of necessity. And in an economy that, you know, often is, you know, falling short and not, you know, providing the jobs that people kind of are looking for, you know, with the unemployment. I think it's a really exciting opportunity for people to maybe try something different.
Sure.
and try to grow some food and make a little money off the land for sure.
Well, as individuals, you know, you get the paper in the morning, you read about the economic outlook, you read about the unemployment rate, you read about, stock prices going down and property values going all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, you must feel a little inured from that, a little removed from that. Joel, you're kind of nodding. Erica, not so much. Talk about, I mean, are you the ultimate rebels? Are you outside of society? I guess what I'm trying to get here is sort of reaching out to people who might find this lifestyle attractive, but are hesitant to completely sort of pull themselves away and become so insular. So what's it like just having, you know, being in the same place, doing the same thing every day, and how are you meeting other people? Erica, you mentioned a community. How are you meeting other people who are also young farmers? And what are you learning from each other?
Well, I guess I want to touch on the newspaper thing. I see articles in the newspaper a lot, and there's all these kind of grim forecasts for people who've just graduated from college and what are they going to do with their degree, and the job right. market is so sparse, and I just don't really buy it, you know. We both graduated from college, you know, we're both fairly educated people, and I think because we have degrees, we're better suited, in fact, to be growing food, you know. I think you should have excellent credentials to be providing food for people. And so I think if you are a young person feeling kind of wayward and shiftless, and what do? I mean, I guess, you know, just start a garden. You don't have to give up your life. You mm-hmm. don't have to, you know, you can still watch TV if you want to. It's just, I think, incorporating slowly elements that are new to you so that they can become more every day and become more natural is really important. And, you know, I hear about unemployment and people calling on the government for support and wondering if they should pay their rent or buy groceries. And I don't think you have to choose. I think you can pay your rent and grow a garden. It's really pretty simple. And a lot of people will say that, you know, access to tools and education, you know, is limited. But, you know, we all have a library. There's a lot of seeds available. You can get in touch with the Food Hub. There's a lot of resources out there. And yeah, if you want to just go to Barnes & Noble and pick up a book about farming, that's how Joel started. So there's a lot of ways to get into it.
We're actually coming towards the end of the show. I'd like you to just share your thoughts on the future of farming in our society. Is this, we talked about the movement that's burgeoning now, but do you see this? Have you heard about this growing up and farming coming back, small farming coming back in communities across the nation?
I think so. You know, I mean, you never know, you know, which way, you know, things will go. But I think that, yeah, it is a growing movement. And I think out of necessity and just, you know, interest. But I'm pretty optimistic.